say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there any public comment to be? So our first action item is an amendment to the vessel leasing agreement. Jim?
So obviously it's been very frustrating for us for the last 2 years of having this boat for sale, and no one seems to want to buy this boat. For various reasons, you know, one is it's a monohull, two, it's seen better days, and three, it's got the older engines. Even though they are newer engines, it doesn't have the new Tier 4 engines, which everybody seems to want because of all the pollution regulations. So there has been little interest. So I reached out to our broker, who I still believe is the best broker for this boat. He is going to the West Coast Convention of Ferry Operators this week. Matter of fact, he's there now. He suggested that if we're really serious and we really got to unload this thing, that we need to lower the price. He said he's had people interested, but the issue is transportation. Most of the people that want it are either in Louisiana or in the Caribbean. It's $90,000 to get it from here through the Panama Canal. So if people are putting that $90,000 in their brain to transport it, all of a sudden it pushes it over the value of the boat. So he's suggesting we go $299,500 instead of $399,500, which is where we're at.
And when you say deliver it, is that getting a crew to bring it around?
Either way, they priced it either having a crew, the problem is not enough fuel to keep on board. So the easiest way everybody thinks to do it is take it to Vancouver, put it on a freighter, and take it around that way.
Because I was thinking about weather, whether that makes it.
So that's the $90,000 quote is putting it on a freighter, getting it through the Panama Canal, dumping it on the other side of the canal, then they can go to Louisiana or wherever from there. So with that, to complicate the matter more, at 6 in the morning, I got an email this morning from Fred Rolfe, who actually put the offer in for $300,000, the Kingston resident here. He can't buy it because his company is in shambles right now. However, he has someone in that's a friend in San Francisco that is very interested and would like to inspect the boat.
Excellent.
So, of course, if he does this, he wants a commission because he's a broker. He's proposing, though, and I did the math when I got into work, that we sell it for $375. He takes his commission. We're still going to have to pay this guy his commission because we're on contract. But we might be able to come out even ahead of just reducing it to $299.
How far ahead? It was just rough.
$10,000 probably, not a lot. But by going that way, we actually, if in fact they will buy it for $375, pay him his 7% commission, which is $21,000, and then paying this guy his $20,000, it would be down maybe $30,000 by it.
And does that change the amount we have to pay FTA?
No. So then the next
net left.
The next step would be going to the FTA, and I think we need to have Carolyn or our attorney write the letter to the FTA and plead our case that basically says this boat needs to have been depreciated, because even though we don't have day-to-day service, we have kept the boat in service as far as inspections, as far as insurance. So we should be able to depreciate it the last 3 or 4 years, and that would be the fight we would have to do with FTA.
Has Carolyn said there's any precedent for you being able to do this, for them responding in this way?
No. It's just a shot in the dark.
Historically, they've been quite...
So we know that they have a piece of paper from us. It was done when Corey was here that says, basically, we agree that $480 is what we owe. So we got to know that this is going to cost us $200,000 anyway we look at it, $250,000.
I think the market's the market. You know, you're not going to sell something for more than it's worth. So the only working on the FDA end is more, even though they're pretty adamant that I don't think we can change the market.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's a West Coast buyer who doesn't need to ship.
Yeah. Our odds are slim either way.
The guns to our head, if in fact we're going to redo the barge, which we have to do, I have a dry dock date in March. So those boats have to be off that dock by March. So it's not too far away, as we all know.
Could we tie Express up at the visitor's dock, Long Berth?
You know,
we used to pick passengers up there, but I don't know if it's you could tie it. I mean, I'm not saying we want to do it that way. It's just that it relieves a little pressure if we can.
Right. I think that's an option.
Not that
I worry that our cleats and you know, the piles in that area aren't designed to hold a 120-foot boat.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
It's a less secure place.
Right.
So that's useful if we don't sell it until April, but hopefully with this price and potentially even with this deal, be able to unload it.
Can we work both ends and let him still market in San Francisco and still be responsible? Because there may be a West Coast buyer in San Francisco.
As long as we pay commissions, they're fine.
Yeah.
So we need to know we can't skirt the commission thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if we have one broker trying to sell at $375 on the West Coast and another broker going to a West Coast conference and offering another $299,
right.
The $375 sale is going to go up in a puff of smoke, and he'll, if he's really interested, he'll go talk to the other broker.
So what I would suggest we do in the interim is let's do a month at $375 instead of $299. See how San Francisco pans out. Then I'll come back to you if that falls through and go to $299.
Because he would know if there were was interest at a lower rate price.
And I'm going to really push him to get an offer. Look, great, we're at $375, but have somebody throw us an offer.
Mm-hmm.
So we make sure it's our best offer.
We have no idea how long that $375 deal would take to close.
They want to come for an inspection, so if I sign the paperwork, they want to schedule an inspection right away. So it could be within a month, I would think.
The conference is going now.
Yeah, just starting.
So we should know in a week or two whether he's got any information already.
Could you say that a little louder?
We should know in about a week or two whether the conference has turned up any buyers. So I think we could hold tight at $375.
Mm-hmm. Are we going to miss an opportunity to market it at the West Coast Boat Show, whatever it's called?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think if we lower it today to $375 and we make it clear to the broker that we are open to offers, you know, don't go down to $299, but say we're open to offers.
$375 OBO.
Yeah, see what that can turn up. And then if it doesn't turn up, if San Francisco falls apart, I'll come back with another amendment.
I don't see that we have much option at this point.
No,
we've got to market the boat at what it'll sell for.
The thing that I like about Fred's proposal is he's got a buyer in hand, so I like that. Mm-hmm. Now, whether he wants the boat or not is a whole other issue, but at least we have somebody that's interested in coming to look at it, where our contract broker really hasn't sent anybody to us to actually inspect.
As far as we know, Fred's customer or potential buyer knows enough about the boat to know what he's bidding on and not just...
Fred did a full inspection of the boat, and he thought enough about it to make an offer of $300,000 that fell apart. So he knows enough to tell his friend what he's looking at.
Could you tell... Would it be a strip? To say, hey, Fred, we have a marketing opportunity. It's kind of like a boat show. And we'd like to see if there's a higher offer, we're going to go in at 375, and then we'll, you know, if it doesn't go there, we'll probably, we're very much interested in your offer.
Yep.
That, you know, may, I think that's where we're at, actually. That's where I'm at. I don't know about the others.
Yeah, I think it's important we do the OBO thing. Well, let's get a number thrown at us for the contract. We can always say no.
So the action today would be to modify and adopt this purchase agreement.
Authorize 375 right now so that they can go to the conference.
Okay. So that would be a change to paragraph one?
Right.
So I move that we authorize the executive director to lower the price on the sale of the Kingston Express. The gross asking price would be $375,000, but to notify the broker also that we're interested in any offers that could be obtained.
I second that motion.
And I suspect that we are all in favor.
Amen.
Thank you.
Just a comment. I think we need to, in our budget, include this as an expense.
That should be
for next year to track, based on FTA not reducing their.
I think we have to assume that FTA will not do that, and that might also impact. You know, we need to look at what our legal, how much legal fees would we be willing to incur in an effort to lower the price before we just go along and write the check to FTA.
Mm-hmm. We are still on, Carolyn is still on retainer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So we could have at least the initial work.
Yeah, just a letter. I think just a letter would be a good start. Mm-hmm.
Is there any potential that FTA would respond to I know we have an appraisal from back then, but that FTA would be responsive to recognizing that was then, this is now, in terms of the market value of the boat.
Yeah, I think that we need to send the FTA that actual appraisal.
So there's like 3 points. This is a fair appraisal of the value of the boat. We've made a good faith effort to sell it at the proper price. We adopted a depreciation schedule that wasn't as aggressive as this type of boat normally is. You know, the IRS, you know, and then we withheld depreciation from when we stopped putting it in service, even though the value continued to depreciate. So maybe there's some angle between, well, it seemed like they're cogent arguments. I don't know, to me.
Well, I really think they want to get it off their books. Matter of fact, they called Sam the other day to say what's going on. They're at a point now where they want to get this done, so.
Too bad we can't trade it for the black boat and sell the black boat.
I thought we were just going to give the black boat.
Actually, the owners of the black boat called last night.
What did they have to say?
458. Well, they're still trying to raise their money. They haven't abandoned it.
Good to know.
Okay.
Nothing.
So you'll be the signator. And that will be reflected in the. Okay, so the next item is open floor discussion on the 2018 draft budget.
I was hoping we would get some people here. I was at my port advisory committee meeting and encouraged them to get the word out that I'm doing a budget. So again, this is the same thing
as
saw last week.
Okay.
However, I am encouraging, after thinking about this, to recommend that we go with the idea of a 3% increase for all except ADOC.
Just a question on that. If you were to recover the same amount from BCD and ADOC, would it be over, as if you had ADOC, would it be something more than 3%? You see what I mean? If you were to recover the income you lost on not going up on ADOC and then recovered that from the other remaining docks, would it be a fractional?
Yeah, I'd have to look at that.
Yeah, it seemed to me that it would boost B, C, and D, B, C, D, E up over 3%, but if it's so small.
Yeah.
Just an idea.
Well, one of the ideas I talked with the advisory committee about yesterday, and I was very candid that we need to come up with some kind of progressive system that charges more for a larger boat than a smaller boat. And I was surprised, Butch Brown and Steve Young were, they nodded, they understood that concept.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I showed them the competitive marinas out there and showed them where everybody was at. And so my idea would be, and I shared this with them, that we leave ADOC alone, give B, C, D, and E all a 3% increase, and then in April, we come back and we review only C, D, and E. Leave B at 3%, and then look, what do we do for the bigger boats in C, D, and E? Do we do ramp it up over 3 years? Do we give them a larger hit? They recommended that whatever we do, if it's going to be major, that we put it over a couple of years, and I agree.
When I looked at Port Orchard, now it's hard, it's very hard to do this,
yeah,
because when you say one slip is at X rate, and there's one of them, and 100 slips at Y rate, how do you come up with an average rate? But it seemed to me it was like a 12% increase, which isn't that hard to me. You know, I don't own a big boat, but even still, it seems like when you're talking about ramping up, if you're just to get to the top end of the market, I think it's very doable without it stretching out over many, many years. You know, just
sure.
I also would offer that maybe we have a policy that if a waiting list is less than 6 months, then we don't raise the rates on that dock. That there's some demand-based thing because of the money we lose with empty slips, something like that. That's sort of a general way of doing it.
Do we know the waiting lists for other marinas?
It depends. Port Hadlock is probably 10 years. Port Ludlow has open slips. Port Townsend, I don't know, what was it when you were there? It's quite a wait.
I think their current, on something equivocal to ADOC, is at a year right now, and then anything at 35.
Most marinas are pretty full. Like I said, Port Ludlow isn't. Bremerton is still not full.
It makes a difference whether it's covered or not, too, doesn't it?
But that's Port Orchard's the only comp we have on this side of the bay that's covered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would impact us at all. But last night at the old port meeting, Larry, I think he was last name, he's the executive director of Port of Allen.
Capola. Mm-hmm.
Capola, mm-hmm. Thank you. Was there. He actually lives in Manchester, but he's mm-hmm. executive director down in Port Allen. And they are pushing forward on funding for full-service marina there. Mm-hmm. He didn't say how big it was going to be, and I didn't get a chance to ask him, but that seems to sort of fly in the face of conventional wisdom about declining demand versus increasing demand, but maybe it's because they're in a nice landlocked area, but quiet area.
You know, I just had some experience in the commercial marina business when I was on the East Coast, and the way it works there is the value added where they make their money. They don't make their money necessarily on slips. They make their money on selling stuff, doing boat repairs. It's all that other stuff mm-hmm. that a full-service marina does where the profit margin is.
Things that then pop up around that.
And typically, they're floating on the fact that property values are going to go up and they'll all retire rich. But basically, that's a strategy to get more revenue out of their waterfront property. Just that may be what he's aiming for.
Yeah, Anne was there yesterday, and owning a marina in Lake Union, she has a whole different idea. But she was very much in favor of some kind of a progressive system. And then once we get to that progressive system, then there's no big hits. We just go up by CPI evenly. There's just that one initial hit to get there.
Just something on the progressive system. I'd rather see it be okay. Standard boat on this dock is XY. So we don't measure boats.
I know, we're not gonna measure
you
boats.
You know, that it's just you're renting this much water, you know, and that's the way it goes. And you can put whatever you want in it. I mean, actually Ed had wondered whether they could put two boats in it. So it's not
Well, that's why we're lucky, because all of our slips are a progressive rate. I mean a length. So, you know, we know everybody on B-Dock, they're 28-foot slips, so we'll allow 30-foot in there, but that's kind of it. We know on D-Dock it's 32, or on C-Dock it's 32 feet. So it's pretty easy. They're segregated by, it's a little screwy on E-Dock because we have 40, 45, and 50-foot slips, but that's the only one where we have that.
So we'll make the decision in this budget about the 3% increase for BCDE, and then the decision about how we'll structure the rest of it will happen next year,
right.
And we'll have an opportunity to hear from public, et cetera.
I offered to Steve that I'd be more than happy to come present to the yacht club, because that's a lot of the voters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's get together and let's have a talk. Let's.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction you got from Steve and Butch at your coffee with the director was kind of neutral, or
they nodded.
They understand what we're doing.
They understand. That's why I thought the Coconut Telegraph would bring people here today, but it hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that our tenants know they have it really good. They're not isolated. They know what other people are paying.
I've been told more than once by a tenant that he'd pay double for that.
Yeah,
so be happy.
You know, as long as it's not draconian, as long as we have a rationale why we're doing it, and we do have a good story, you know, if we're investing $75,000 in bathrooms for them, you know, if we're investing in infrastructure for them, it's a good story.
Well, we've got to worry about the low-end size part of the market, because there's a shift going on there.
That's why I said no increase for ADOC.
I have no problem with us being at the top of the what we could consider our market area. Mm-hmm. Bainbridge, I don't think it's our market area.
No,
that's just a different world.
Well, and nor is Port Ludlow or Port Hadlock. You know, they're $10 a foot.
You know,
we're not that. Port Orchard is our real comp. I think we're better than Port Orchard just because we've got a better location than Port Orchard. But I mean,
well, that helps you have a higher rate. I mean, PDs always want that. But one thing we give that most marinas don't do, and I'm cutting my own throat here, we give parking.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get parking at Paulsville, you know, and there's value associated with mm-hmm. that. And so that is a plus. Plus, we've got a park here, a beautiful park. Now, most people, boaters don't care, but even still, we do give parking, which we haven't put a price on. And,
which, now that you've raised it, yesterday, went down to take a look at the new Port of Kingston sign and walk around the docks and stuff, and realized that all the permit spaces were filled.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think there were that many boats out midday on a Monday morning.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to wondering, what if we eliminated the permits and factored that in with our rates and the potential for increased revenue from parking? And I don't know that that's a decision that we can reach in this budget process, because we're pretty far down the road, but
maybe I think that needs a lot of public input.
Yeah,
but
so
that would be
but
much
who,
more reactive.
Let's say, who benefits from that?
Yeah,
it's a small slice.
Yeah.
And
I think the issue is not me and Mary, say, going down to go shopping at the coffee shop. It's commuters.
Mm-hmm.
And getting
mm-hmm.
a handle on the commuter use of the parking permit as opposed to infrequent use.
Yeah.
And the issue you got there, though, are you going to recover the income if you say, well, you're going to have to buy a separate permit to have parking. You might lose income.
That's why it's going to take more study and more discussion. We've got to look at, would we do more monthly permits that would allow commuters to park on a monthly basis? Or would we, just how would we approach that? Because you're right, as I looked at it, my thought process had to do with how do you enforce permit holders who are actually commuting and coming in there parking all day, not going within 100 yards of their boat and just using it as a commuter lot, short of putting trackers on people. And I don't think we won't even want to go there. But maybe the way to do it would be to come back to the idea of no permits, but more monthly parking options. And that might, I forget how many permit spaces we had, but in walking all the way down and back up through the this end of it, every permit stall was filled.
Yeah, so that's the problem you're trying to solve is what?
The problem I'm trying to solve, well, there's multiple problems. One is the idea ostensibly, as I understood it, for a permit with your slip was that you'd be placed to park your car while you're on your boat.
Mm-hmm.
But it appears that it's being used for something else, and in that vein is being misused, because that's not what we intended to do when we set that up. One car I see down there is it's a car I know, and someone that used to live in the marina, and I understand no longer does. So I think the car is just left there because it's free parking. Actually belongs to another family member. So the process that, that was initially set up seems to be being abused. And couple that with the idea that we keep hearing, and I think we all believe to some extent, we're going to have parking issues once the Foot Ferry gets up and running. And if the permit stalls, what if we have 100 permit stalls, something like that?
No, we only 80? Have 40.
40.
We brought them down.
We brought it down to like 40. Does
but
that
they still get to park the other place for free.
What other you, place?
Oh, well, in a numbered stall.
Yeah, if you're a boat owner.
If you're a boater. So
if,
even
well,
though
we're no, not, no, yeah. no, no. If you're a permit, if you're a monthly permit parker, there wouldn't be a parking permit comes with your boat slip. You can have a boat slip for X dollars a foot, and you could have a parking permit for Y dollars a month. And if you want that, if you're down here often enough, it makes sense to you. If you're just using the place to park your family spare cars, that's your problem, not ours to solve.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe you can do the progressive boat rate? Okay, that's one thing. Maybe parking is a total issue. All our parking with Kitsap Transit. How do we change the way we do parking so that it works better? That's part of that discussion because there's other issues that need to be.
It's also all part of the discussion of who are we subletting to and who's doing the subletting, and we're taking that over. I mean, we're piece by piece managing the use of the marina more effectively. Mm-hmm. And so I think this is all part of that same trend that people will recognize and be able.
Yeah.
Somewhat okay with.
Well, it all depends on whose ox is getting gored.
Yeah.
And some people will, you know, and if, you know, the story that Frank tells about, you know, they get overridden with, you know, people opposing to something. There's 50 of them in here, but there's 5,000 who live in the district.
Sure.
We got to be concerned about the other 4,950.
So we have 19 liveaboards, and they all have two parking passes. So, I mean, there's 40 cars right there that we could potentially have there all day.
They have two parking passes.
Everybody's allowed two parking passes. The third one, we charge $45 a year?
Yes.
I think it's $45 a year for the third one.
Where are the permit spaces located?
Excuse me?
Where are the permit spaces located?
Any numbered space. Oh, you're talking boaters?
Permit only.
Permit only is just around the marina. So there, you can see that they're just all around ABC.
They're closer to the water.
Yeah. And then they can park with that sticker if they're all full in any numbered space.
Okay.
So that's a challenge because there's a lot of dynamics in the parking.
And you know, there's lots of different ways to do it. For example, it might be if you're a liveaboard, you can buy, you know, pay a certain amount that includes a permit, but if you're a liveaboard who doesn't have a car, that doesn't do you any good, so you don't pay the higher value.
Yeah. I got two passes so that I can take either car and I don't have to worry about grabbing the pass out of the other car. I think that's the way it is with most occasional users.
That's another problem though, hard to monitor, is that you have two parking places and my good buddy Bruce wants to park and go to Seattle. Here, take my pass because the passes are transferable to any vehicle where it'd probably be much better if every car had a decal.
That's a good idea. But it's an interesting. You got a lot on your plate to figure parking out.
Yeah. So I throw it out now for because it'll take a lot of thought and a lot of public comment on it. But and it's too late in this budget cycle, I think, to address something that large. But by next year, it would be good to have rethought that process, kind of the same way we're rethinking the boat mortgage fee process.
Let me just. Oh, sorry.
I didn't say anything.
Oh, I was thinking of, you know, I raised this wild hair on a 3%. Actually, the CPI is like 2.5, but the CPIW, which is what we use for salaries, which is sort of the blue collar CPI, is 3. Mm-hmm. So if we're a little below 3, we're actually meeting the intent of CPI. even though blue collar workers, you know, their CPI is different than the CPI. So 3 is actually a little higher than, it's just that our labor costs are going up by 3%. Yeah. But our other costs may not go up by 3%.
Yeah, other costs may go up more or less. I think it's hard to, I've always had to look at CPI a little bit of a cocked eyebrow because there's such a one-size-fits-all approach to things.
Yeah, it's mainly meant for like welfare benefits and things.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, people use that.
Doesn't CPIW take out fuel and food? It takes out something.
It takes out, I don't know that, but the BLS is always looking in the rearview mirror. They're not projecting. They don't project, so the projections could be anybody's guess.
So were there any other topics besides the mortgage increase or parking with the budget that...
No, we're going to have our budget hearing on the 24th. So it'll be an open public hearing, and hopefully people will come.
So the budget will be the one that you presented us with 3%. Are we going to have a note on the sale of the...
Yes.
We'll put
the vote on there. That does include a $1 parking fee increase, too, to $6.
Mm-hmm.
So that's both categories. So you can look at the numbers and see how that works.
So this is basically what we put in well.
And that is not on the web right now, so we will get that on the web today with a 3% increase.
That still puts us at essentially a break-even operating.
Well, if we throw a $250,000 expense on there for a boat.
There's so many dynamics with the foot ferry. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know.
Well, that's what I want to brief you on next really quickly. Are we done with the budget, or...
I do have one other question. How is the potential legal settlement included?
It's not in here at all.
So where, in fact, will that come from?
It'll come from our reserves. Our cash reserves are $2.4 million, so that's where it would come from.
I recommend the statement, but no numbers associated with that statement.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Just put a category in for,
for
legal settlement, but no number.
No number.
Yeah, good idea. And we'll make a note on the front page here that possible foot ferry or possible red boat issue and legal.
I think the word should be like litigation costs as opposed to a settlement amount, because there's different costs associated with different different paths.
A judicial
you might
order
take.
Is not a settlement, it's a judicial order.
Yeah, so.
Right. Okay. Good.
Okay.
So that leaves us to executive session.
So let me just brief you for a second on, because I have to get back to Kitsap Transit today, and I keep getting bad news over the last 3 days. So the inspectors from Foss Maritime came back and did a quote for us on fixing the barge. There are some major corrosion issues inside the barge when they went in and inspected and did their soundings. They are recommending repair and painting the inside and outside, which we didn't think we were going to have to do. Their comment is, if your idea is to use this barge for 3 to 4 years, you don't need to do it. But if your idea is this is a 10-year job, you better do it now or you'll be replacing the barge in 3 or 4 years. The price is $524,000 to do that. I was budgeting $225,000. Obviously, this isn't our problem, but I have to break the news to Kitsap Transit today. So then yesterday, the quotes came in for the sewer pump, and the original was $125,000, and then they came back and amended because of freeze protection. Who would have thought that waste needs to be insulated? So we have to insulate 900 feet of pipe against freezing. So those two things, along with what we're doing with the tube and the waiting area because of the security, is going to push this budget to about $1.3 million.
What was the increase on the sewer pump?
The sewer pump is going to be $25,000 to insulate the entire 900 feet.
Mm-hmm. So that's in addition to the $125,000?
No, total.
Okay.
So what, it'd be $150,000. The fuel still stays at $170. That hasn't changed. The barge has doubled in price, basically. The he I said, well, I could build a new barge for $500. He goes, no, you can't. So he had his estimator as $1.2 million for a new barge. Because
versus 1.3 to upgrade.
No, it's $500 to upgrade this one.
Right. But the total
cost of
upgrades that we're looking at
all
for
barge
is 1.3.
Is there a used barge market that might have a high, better barge that's in better shape?
Well, the issue is fitting our piles. Our piles were driven for this barge, and so the chances of finding a 40 by 90 that's the exact size where the piles go is pretty remote.
You'd have to put different pile connectors.
We could look, certainly.
Well, I think it's a Kitsap Transit's both on that side of the net. They want a second opinion, they want to go a different way.
Yeah.
We just need to make sure it's seaworthy.
So then, we've got a firm price on the gerbil tube of $225. So that's done. Insulated, heating, air conditioning, new windows, painting. But then they threw the security thing at us. And for security, I need a staging area, covered staging area outside of the gerbil tube. So Bob had a great idea, and that's to contract with the company that did the kayak rack. And actually, if we took our kayak rack and made it 10 feet longer, it would fit exactly in that dock space. So we'd put that in front of the gerbil tube.
Oh, in front instead of at the other
end. So that would be the security staging area before you entered a secure area. And I think it would look really good. I mean, it's a beautiful kayak rack.
Yeah.
So we got the prices this morning for the kit. It's $22,000, which I think is pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
Just a niggling point is just check the RCO grant for that fishing pier.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that we're not going to trip over some clause.
Yeah.
Because that's supposed to be a fishing dock.
Yep.
Yeah. The reason I asked about a used barge, Kitsap Transit could take the strategy, okay, let's go for the 2 to 3 year thing. And then we'll buy another barge, and like overnight, over a weekend, we'll just bring it in, bolt it in, and all. So that might give them an option that would not be would meet into North Shore.
That would fit their cash flow performance better, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So
and home service interruption.
Yeah, and the whole issue of the test run for 2 or 3 years to see if they can get up to. I mean, I know they're not banking on the idea that they're going to do it 2 or 3 years and it's going to crash,
but it's still going to take a couple of years for them to ramp up to see whether their projections have any validity.
Yeah, 500 people per sailing.
As a ferry person, I remember the Thanksgiving Day massacre when they shut down all service on Port Townsend overnight, and just was havoc. It was not pretty.
So with that. This just came in from Kitsap Transit. They are applying for a ferry boat discretionary grant, and they would like a letter of support. So I unfortunately only have one copy, and if you would like to, they would like the three commissioners to sign that. So you can take your time and read through it. And
when do they need it back?
I would like to get that back to them today.
Today?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead and read it, and then
we'll
just sort of pass around and study.
So it's small font. If we could, go into executive session because Kathleen's expecting her phone call.
Okay.
And then we can deal with this with the checks and stuff after. Would that work?
Yes.
Okay. So we're going to go into executive session. No decision, probably for 20 minutes.
20 minutes, okay.
Okay. All right. So recessing to executive session. Time is now
9:30.
Is there something going to happen after the executive?
Okay.
So we may take action on this.